the journals are the vehicle that really, really showed me what to do. That and diligent research and study, like my life depended on it when it didn't.
Time for the Angler Within podcast with Roy Bilby.
Hello and welcome to the Angler Within podcast. I'm Roy Bilby, your host, along with my co-host, JD.
Hello.
And we're going to lay the groundwork for this podcast, the first two installments. We're going to be talking about, well, how I got to where I am, how we got to where we are, that we're doing a podcast here. Today, I've caught 35,779 bass, and there's a whole story there. Good grief. I started fishing when I was probably 2 years old. My dad had a pile of bamboo poles with the length of line, the length of the pole. And that's what I started with when I was still wearing diapers. And for my seventh birthday, he bought me my first rod and reel. Now that was a big deal. I had two sisters, mom and dad, five of us in the family. We would all go to a local pond together and fish on the weekend evenings. And catch some fish for dinner, and he just wanted to get us out there catching fish.
Were you drowning worms?
Yes, we were. Soaking night crawlers that we dug up in our own garden. He taught me how to pick them after a rainfall with a flashlight. And that bamboo pole, he had a handful of them, so we all would grab one, but nobody had their own. So for my seventh birthday, when I got, it was a True Temper 5-foot fiberglass rod, and a Zebco 202 reel. And I'll tell you what, I was a big deal at 7 years old with my first rod and reel, because I had my own. You know, none of us kids had that. I was first one to get my own rod and reel. And man, I was still using that when I was 18 years old. I caught my first bass when I was 15. I had a summer job working for a guy who lived on a local lake. And he had bought the property, but needed it cleared. So at 15 years old, I was trimming brush, picking up limbs that fell off of a couple big willow trees, building a stone wall, doing all this stuff, raking the property clean, cutting grass, and just getting it ready so he could build there. But the first 2 hours of every day, I fished with that old Zebco rod and reel.
And 202? Was it a 202?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's all I had.
Yeah.
But I worked for him the whole summer. This was 1975, and I made $100 that summer. And at that, you go back to 1975, $100.
I'm checking what it's worth right now. Hang on a second. 1975. Yeah. Hold on. Just hold your thought there. In 1975, $100.
It was a lot of money for me back then. I knew that.
$559.18.
Yeah.
That's what the buying power. $100 in 1975 has the same purchasing power as $559 in 2024.
That's scary, isn't it?
Yeah.
I knew it was a lot of money back then for a 15-year-old boy having it burning a hole in his pocket. It was a lot of money. And I tell this story a lot. I spend every cent on fishing gear. And I bought four rods and reels. I bought an old pal green metal tackle box, and I filled it with everything I could get my hands on. My mother found out, bless her heart. She found out I spent every cent on fishing tackle, and she had a fit.
Yep.
She said, "You spent $100 on nothing but fishing equipment." I said, "But I was trying to impress her with the quality of the stuff I bought."
Yeah,
you know,
they don't understand.
A Mitchell 300 spinning reel, which was that was the gold standard back then. I, you know, this is I knew what the good stuff was and I had the money to buy it. But she looked at me. She said, "What if you don't even like fishing next year?" And I laugh about that.
Such
today
a mom thing to say. Such an angry mom thing to say. The dad's like, "Let the kid have his $100 spend on fishing gear." And she's like, "No."
I don't know if he was thrilled with my decision. $100 would have gone a long way to feed the family back in those times.
Were you hiding that money? Were you hiding the gear that you were buying? Like, did they just not see it? Like, did you? Or you just?
No, I was proud of it. I just look at what I got. It's a Mitchell 300. You don't understand, Mom. You know, and it was just she was livid that I spent all that money on just fishing gear. And what if I didn't even like fishing the next year? Turns out that was completely unfounded. Hallelujah. So fast forward, I got into bass fishing. By the time I was 12, I was interested in fishing for other species. And I got pretty involved in that. But when I turned 15, man, I discovered bass. And that was the beginning of the end for me. I fished for them every chance I got. When I became an adult and could bring in cable TV, I discovered the Bassmasters on TV. 1985. They started doing the Bassmasters on TNN in 1984. And in 1985, was first year I got cable, and I found that show. And it was on Sundays, and I was doing construction work 6 days a week. It was the only day I had off. And that's the day I did all my fishing. So I would record the episodes with the old VHS video cassette recorders. And I would play the episodes back over and over. And I saw what really was the turning point for me, the beginning of this whole journey that I think I'm still in the middle of. Rick Klun had won a tournament by fishing way up a creek in the fall down in the South. And the commentator was Bob Cobb. Anybody who listened remembers the Bassmasters, the original episodes that aired back in the 80s. Bob Cobb was the commentator, and he was interviewing Rick Klun on how he found the winning fish. And I remember Rick Klun saying, "Well, I knew they would be there." And Bob kind of cut him off and said, "Well, they're a wild creature. You couldn't know where they were going to be." He said, "Well, actually, I could," because he was a computer programmer for Exxon Oil Corporation back in the 70s and early 80s before he quit and went full-time pro. And back then, back in those days, I mean, IBM had computers, Exxon Oil Corporation, the Pentagon, and a few other major corporations, but they just weren't common. Nobody had a home computer, but this guy was a computer programmer. So he built his own, and he created a program. He created it solely for one purpose. That was to create a database of tournament results. And he inputted the results from 300 different tournaments, all different locations in the country, all different times of the year. And he inputted the patterns that were used by the first, second, and third place finishers. He just wanted a record of what did the best at all these lakes at any given time of the year. So when they announced a tournament at this location in the fall, he researched that, and he discovered that 90% of the tournaments that time of the year in that location were won in the backs of creeks, because the bass were migrating into those to feed on the shad that migrated into them in the fall. That's just what they did. And a lot of people knew about this, but he also knew that the major tributaries would be covered by the majority of the field. But he effectively eliminated 90% of the playing field for himself before he even got to the lake, which most people would discover as they got there during the 3-day practice period. So he spent his time in obscure tributaries that had no other tournament competitors in them, and located one that had this massive school, and it ended up being the winning fish. And that just really struck a chord with me. I was at a point, I was 25 years old, and I said, I would really like to get better at bass fishing. So I said, if keeping track And keeping records can help this guy win tournaments. If I could keep a journal, maybe it'll improve my results and my motives. I wasn't fishing tournaments at the time, but I was dreaming about it. But I knew I had to get better first. And I it was a very selfish motive. A lot of people know that I've been keeping a journal for almost 40 years now. Every single fishing trip, I started doing it on paper. I still do it on paper. I'm old school. And I started. So in 1985, I determined I would keep a journal. I didn't have a computer, but I can keep it with a pen and paper. And I wrote down all the details I could think of all my fishing trips. And at the end of the year, I didn't know if it had made any difference or not. And again, this was a selfish motive to improve myself so I could go out and win other people's money in bass tournaments. Mm-hmm. And I had no way to determine if it was helping or not. So I decided in 1986, I would do the same thing, but I would count the number of bass I caught and released in a year. And at the end of the year, I had 208 bass and 26 years old. And I thought at the time, hey, I'm pretty good, you know, but I had no clue what I was doing. If people asked me to describe my fishing approach in a word, that word would have been random because I had no rhyme or reason for what I was doing. They said, why are you using that lure? And I said, well, I'm because there's a picture of a bass on the lure package, so I know this will catch bass. Well, why are you throwing it where you're throwing it? But I don't know.
Yet you were still. I mean, what blows my mind is this, and one thing that everyone should know in the audience is that when Roy is talking about his journaling, I can say firsthand that you have first an audio recording. And then you're transcribing it into the book. He's not having wet pages in the boat. You're recording it. Number one, but Roy, I don't think in all my years of fishing, and I've been fishing since I was a little kid. I'd say I started when I was four. My dad took me out and I caught a smallmouth bass in a small creek. Big deal that day. Yeah. Right. I've never caught 200 fish in a year. So 208 divided by 12.
It's less than a bass.
Is 17 fish a month on average? I'm sure you had some hot months that were in there or some months where you didn't get out, right?
Well, so through the spring and summer, were especially good.
That's still more than I've ever caught, like in a month. Like that's like, now how many times do you get out? How many times do you have to get out? Obviously, we know that time on the water.
I would have to go back to that 1985 journal and count the entries I had. Nowhere near what I do today,
right?
Probably. I would say probably about 40, 50 entries. The journals are the vehicle that really, really showed me what to do. That and diligent research and study, like my life depended on it when it didn't. But it was important. It was a passion that and it's still a burning passion today. In 1987, I caught and released 504. And that got my attention because I had more than doubled my original number. And I told myself in the beginning, I said, I'll do this for two more years and I'll compare the numbers. If they're flat or they go down, then it's really not making any difference and I'm wasting my time. But if it goes up, I may have something here. When it more than doubled, that's when I realized, oh my goodness, this is having a tremendous positive impact on my results. And then the third year I counted, I got 886. To me, that was a staggering amount, more than four times what I caught just mm-hmm. 2 years prior. This is really making a huge difference.
What were the changes you were making for those last two jumps? Was it just because you were learning more, obviously?
I was learning more. I started keeping track of barometric pressure, water temperature, moon phase, pH of the water, air temperature, water temperature. If the barometric pressure rose or fell, what it was when I started, what it was when I ended, the prevailing weather conditions, and of course, the date and the time period that I fished. And you know, that showed me how my results were in different phases and different seasons of the year. I mean, you go down south, they have mild winters. You can fish open water year round. Here in the Northeast, it's the seasonal changes are a lot more dramatic.
Right.
The spring, we still have ice, and our lakes are frozen, you know, 3 months out of the year now. And it can be 95 degrees in the summer, but it can be minus 20 in the winter. That's a tremendous fluctuation, but I've learned how to adapt to all those seasonal changes because of the journals and what they revealed to me. But this I coupled with watching videos, watching Bassmasters, In Fishermen, Bill Dance, Jimmy Houston Outdoors, Hank Parker's Outdoor Magazine. These were my formative years in my bass fishing.
Which is funny because they were mine too. I used to watch Jimmy Houston every Saturday morning. ESPN Outdoors back in the day was a big deal. You look forward to it. And it always came on. It was always on at the same time as cartoons. So my dad and I would fight over the remote. But
no contest.
He would win. Question. Okay. Tell me about moon phase versus your output of fish that you're getting.
If you look at, and this is the thing that really reveals that. And I can go back in my journals and see the same thing. If you look at the records from state to state to state, the big, if you look at the Bassmaster list of the top 25 largest bass in history, it's pretty incredible how many of those really, really, really big ones in all these different locations were caught 3 days either side of a full moon. That's a really, really good time to be on the water. A lot of fish feed during those times, but you've got your odds of catching a big one increase with either side of that full moon. They really, really do. And the records show that. It's quite a few that were caught. It's not a random thing. In 1987, I caught and released 886 bass, and I got the wild idea in my head, what if I could catch and release 1,000 in a year? So I've always been a goal setter. So I set myself 1988. I want to catch 1,000 bass. And February 9th that year, our house burnt to the ground. We lost everything. And so I backburnered fishing for a couple years to try to rebuild. I'm a big avid outdoorsman at that point in my life. I was doing good, making good money, doing construction work. I had 54 guns in my gun collection to hunt with.
And they all went up.
I had Weatherbys. I had an Antonio Zoli. I just had a lot of firearms that if I wanted one, I just bought one. And I was saving those all for my later years when I would retire and have all the time in the world to hunt, and I would have everything I needed and wouldn't have to buy anything. But we lost everything in a house fire. They sustained a lot of smoke damage. But the thing was, I had a lot of favorite fire. I kept all my handguns because I had them in cases. They weren't damaged. But I had four gun cabinets, one I had hand-built myself that held 15 guns. It was huge. It was beautiful. And we lost all that. All the glass blew out of them, exploded. And the damage that was done to them was water and smoke. And a friend of mine said, don't worry about the guns. I'll take care of all of them. They took them apart. They oiled them and covered them with blankets and put them away till I could get to them. When I did get to them, I was horrified because they were all orange. I mean, bright orange with rust. Turns out that when smoke is mixed with water and lays against metal, when they oiled them, they kind of put a barrier over that and sealed all that. It creates a chemical reaction that rusts things like you wouldn't believe. They thought they were doing a good thing. I thought they were too. Yeah. I helped them. I said, this is wonderful. Thank you, thank you, thank you.
So how much fishing stuff was in your car?
All we had was the clothes on our backs and our two vehicles.
Holy crap.
Yep. Yep. It was pretty devastating. So we rebuilt, we came back from that and started all over. I sold the entire collection in the condition they were in for $6,000. A guy had just retired, said, I'll buy everything. And he took them all. And I had $6,000 and I went out and bought a brand new bass tracker in 1990. And I've been off the water. I knew if I started fishing, I wouldn't get the house done. So I forced myself. I went fishing maybe a dozen times each year. That was it. If I didn't, I would go crazy.
Yeah, I'm sure. But
I bought this brand new. It was a 1989 Bass Tracker Pro 17 with a 40-horse Evinrude. And, man, I was living large. I built a garage so I'd have a place to put it, so I could keep it out of the elements. And I immediately started fishing tournaments. I didn't even get used to the boat. I dove in so far over my head. I fished tournaments for 5 years, starting in 1990. I fished them through 1994 with a local circuit, but they had 150 boat fields. And I was suddenly fishing Lake Champlain, Saratoga Lake, Hudson River, Mohawk River, Scroon Lake, all these places I had zero experience in, going there believing every time I'm going to win. And I was paying people for 5 years very good money to fish against me. Guys that had 30 years, 25 years, 20 years experience on me on those lakes. And I just couldn't figure them out. And after 5 years, I decided to take 3 years off and work on specific techniques that I felt I really needed. I was good with a spinnerbait. I was good with a plastic worm. But you can't do that all the time. I took 1 year off and worked strictly on crankbaits and got where I had a lot of confidence in my ability with them. I wanted to fish tournaments, but I wanted to stop paying other people good money. So I spent the second year learning how to fish a Carolina rig because nobody did that, but that's all they talked about on these TV shows. It was winning the Bassmasters Classic. It was a great fish producing technique, and it took me a while, but I figured out how to do it and put fish in the boat. It's a way of fishing a lure just off the bottom. You use an egg sinker and a swivel and a bead, and you put a leader on it to the other end of the swivel. The swivel is tied to your main line with a bead ahead of it and a egg sinker above that, 1/2 ounce, 3/4 ounce, something you can really lob out there. It takes your presentation right to the bottom, and you tie a leader on the back of that swivel with your hook and with your plastic bait, whatever you want to throw. A lot of people throw a lizard, a centipede, a craw, anything you can put on that. What it does, if you use a plastic that's got some air pockets built into it so it's got a little buoyancy, it will lift off the bottom somewhat. Mm-hmm. And that egg sinker makes a little, you drag it, and it looks like this bait is following it. It draws attention, and they grab the bait. And I actually did incredibly well on a tournament on Champlain with that technique because I saw a guy down the channel from me doing the same thing. I went, I can do that. And first time I ever weighed in the limit. That was a big step for me. I can do this. And that was years later. And then the third year, a big deal for me was learning how to fish a jig and pig because I had no experience with it. And it became one of my primary big fish techniques. We have won tournaments doing that, catching our kicker fish with it. And it's one of my favorite things to throw. Once I had those three techniques under my belt, here's what blew my mind. I started fishing tournaments again in 1995, and I won the very first one I entered. And that, for me, was like, okay, I can actually do this. And that was the beginning of the end for me. I finally won. I got a first place, got a trophy, got some money. I went, all right, I thought I was a big deal again. But winning one tournament can sometimes give you too much confidence. Confidence is a good thing, but overconfidence doesn't serve anybody.
Question. And,
yeah.
Jig and pig. Is that the act of catching a pig on a jig?
Nope.
Okay. What's a jig and pig?
A jig and pig. That's funny. That's funny, JD. a jig and pig. Most guys listening don't know what this is. It's a skirted bass jig.
Okay.
Any weight you want, right up to an ounce and a quarter, ounce and a half. It can be a football jig. It can be a swim jig. It's a painted jig head with a silicone or living rubber skirt and a weed guard. And then you put a trailer on it. They call it jig and pig because when I first started doing it, they were using a pork rind frog or a pork rind craw. That nowadays, everybody throws plastic. I throw a plastic craw. I throw a half dozen different ones.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a primary technique for me. Black and blue is a great color. I use a natural craw. I use a June bug. It's just a big fish bait because it's a mouthful.
Yeah,
and
no,
it's
sure.
Got a good stout hook, and you can throw it. It's got a heavy weed guard. You can throw it right in the brush, and you can just work it all the way through. And it's what I use for what I call combat fishing, full contact. When I go in and fish laydowns and brush piles and heavy cover along the bank, and it really pulls the big ones out of the jungle. So I really started my tournament fishing full bore in 1995, but I couldn't compete full time because I only had, if I took a Saturday off to fish a tournament, it was costing me a lot of money. So I fished the ones here and there where I could. And I still had never caught 1,000 bass in a year, and I wanted to do that. But the problem was, if I committed to tournaments, I was fishing unfamiliar bodies of water. I got better at catching fish there, but it was still a struggle, and I couldn't compete full time until I left construction after 20 years, and I started working as a carpenter at a state school, at a State University of New York at Colesville.
Mm-hmm.
And that afforded me weekends off. Well, weekends. Weekends are 2 days. We used to call them ends because we only had Sundays off. 2 days? Did people know about this? And I dove full-time into a tournament circuit, fishing every other Saturday all summer long. And I hooked up with a student from the college who was head over heels into bass fishing. His name was Ryan Coulter. He was studying fisheries and wildlife, and he went on to work for DEC. He's a fisheries biologist with DEC now, situated down in New Paltz. And I'll tell you what, he and I fished 14 years together, and just the absolute best tournament partner I ever had, bar none. We worked so good together. I was old enough to be his dad, but that didn't mean anything. I was old school. He was new school. We really complimented each other. We were both very good with a jig and pig. We were both very good at fishing a plastic worm, but he had techniques he was better at, and I had techniques that I did that he wasn't strong in. And we both just really complimented each other. We won a lot together. The first year we ever hooked up to win tournaments, the first tournament we entered, we did a walleye tournament before the bass season opened just to see how we would do in a competition setting. We got second place. And then we won two of the first bass tournaments, two of the first four tournaments we fished for bass. We ended up being third in points that year for Angler of the Year. We got trophies and money for that. We won two tournaments. We had seconds and third. We just really did extremely well together, and we did that for 14 years, and we just really complimented each other. Never had a disagreement, never had an argument. We both came up with ideas. There were tournaments when he was stronger than me. There was tournaments when I was stronger than him. Mm-hmm. But when we were both strong was when the bite was really, really tough. And those were the tournaments that we won. When other people weren't coming in with a limit, we were cleaning house. That's where we were really the strongest. If everybody was catching them, we were trying to keep up with the guys that were catching the giants.
Right.
You know, if it was a slugfest, we'd be in the mix. But if it was really, really tough, that's where we seemed to shine.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, those years were fantastic. But I also learned that I could compete in tournaments. And as I got better, I could also break 1,000 fish a year. And as the numbers grew, I broke 10,000, which was a milestone for me. 10,000 bass caught and released, because I kept a running tally from year to year and just added them up. When I hit 15,000, they did a story in the newspaper. It got seen in I got a little blurb in an outdoor magazine. When I hit 20,000, Bassmaster ran a little story on it, and I had people calling me up, which was really cool. But the real, real big milestone that started opening all the doors was when I broke 25,000. The local newspaper did a full color spread on it. It was 25,000 bass. That was a huge milestone for me. Still is now.
What was the one where they wrote about you? They wrote up a thing on you and the guy was in the basement with you doing the interview. Which one was that?
That was 25,000.
That was 25,000. Okay. I read that story in the paper.
Yeah, he came here on a Saturday morning at 6 a.m. and saw my basement with all the boats on trailers and pegboard line on both sides for 90 feet with all they like an outdoor store, 170 plus rods and reels. Tell everybody, moderation is not my strong suit.
Your basement, I can speak to this, is when I went down there, it was like walking into an old school bait shop. Yeah. I might even call it slightly obsessive compulsive.
Oh, no. But. Oh, no. My tournament partner, Ryan Coulter, he said, oh, you're OCD. I said, well, you think I'm OCD? He said, are you kidding me? He said, I knew it the day I met you.
He said,
but you use it for organization. So you use it as an advantage.
Yeah.
And when he came in and saw the basement, once I had it built up, he walked in and he spent about 45 minutes looking at everything. And he finally turned to me and he said, dude, you have a serious problem. I said, no, I don't. I have a serious advantage. And you, my friend, as my tournament partner, are partner to that. Everything here is at your disposal. We have a serious advantage over our competition.
That's right. That's and right. That, he needs to see it for what it is.
I would hope it changed the way he looked at it. Yeah, it is OCD. Moderation is not my strong suit.
But many of the same pedigree and type. Right in the staircase when you go down those stairs, you've got all of yours like in your
my
background
tournament
picture. There.
Arsenals, all the same rod and reel.
Right, your white reel and the rod.
Actions and they. I am a huge fan of the Bass Pro Shops Carbon Light 2.0 series. A lot of the pros use it. Edwin Evers uses them. Ott Defoe uses them. A lot of these guys that I admire, they use these same rods and reels, and I get them from Bass Pro, and they're they are, if you use those for a day and then pick up your whatever other rod and reel you were using, you're like, this thing feels like a club today. I never noticed it was heavy before, because those carbon lights are so lightweight yet so strong, and the actions are so sweet. You can feel everything. They play a fish incredibly well. I'm just a huge fan of. I have them in three different lengths, several different actions, depending on what I'm using that rod for, what technique I'm using it for. They're technique specific, and I have them in different gear ratios, different sizes of line. It all depends on what I have that rod set up for. And the guy that interviewed me when I hit 25,000. And when we got all done, he closed everything up and he looked around the basement and he said, you know, I've been doing stories, posting your tournament results. Every time you win, I've been posting that stuff for years. He said, and I knew you fished. He said, but I had no idea. And he had one picture with that article when I had my journal spread out on the boat and I was explaining it to him. And then the bottom of that picture, he just had a one word caption, passionate. Mm. And he nailed it. He nailed it. But that 25,000, it got picked up by the Bassmaster website, Don Barone. He's a guy that used to cover sports for ESPN. And then he had won several Emmys for his sports writing and reporting. And he had a really different style of writing. When he came over to Bassmaster, he knew nothing about bass fishing, but he dove right into the culture. He got immersed in it. He learned that there's real human people stories behind it. And he covered that aspect of it. All the other outdoor writers covered the basics, you know, the tournament results, what they used and all that. But he covered it from a personal people angle because he didn't know that much about the culture until he got immersed in it. Mm-hmm. And it was a learning process for him. So he really gave you the inside. It was like going backstage and really getting to know these anglers because he wrote from a totally different approach. And I reached out to the editorial guy at Bassmaster magazine and said, you posted a story on me when I broke 20,000. I'm at 25,000 now. It's been covered by my local newspaper. I had outdoor writers contacting me and doing interviews over the phone while I was fishing because of that, because it somehow got on the internet.
Right.
And I said, if you're interested in covering the story, I would really love to do it with Don Barone. I'm a huge fan of him. It would kind of be like a bucket list item for me to do his story. And this guy picked right up on it. And next thing I know, I get a phone call from Don Barone and I'm pinching myself saying, is this for real? He said, yeah, I want to tell me about this 25,000. And he interviewed me on the phone for about an hour. And he put the story on the Bassmaster website, and holy cow, my cell phone blew up. That 25,000, that milestone was the one that really, really started opening doors for me. And I want to talk about that in our next segment.
Yeah, one of the things that I wanted to prelude that with is that one thing I've admired about you and that I know about you is that you say to yourself, I wonder if I could do this, and yeah. You do it and it fruits like every time. Yeah. Like your success rate,
knock on wood.
I know, but your success rate of shot in the dark cold calls on stuff. But you know why? Because the intent is in the right place. You didn't get into this to be a big deal. You got into this because you enjoyed fishing and you set goals for yourself. Like yeah, you wanted to win. But you didn't set out with the goal.
It started out as a selfish motivation. I was too passionate about it to let that be the thing that was driving me. I set goals. I wanted to know if I could catch 1,000 a year and still compete in tournaments. And I was able to do that. The last 17 years I worked, I broke 1,000, 17 consecutive years in a row while still competing in a full-time tournament schedule. And that blew my mind, that kind of consistency. But again, it goes back to the journals and what I was learning. And in the next segment, we'll talk about the seminars that I started doing and Bass Pro Shops opening the door and offering me a contract. Just crazy things that for a small town boy who started counting his fish, the places that it's taken me and the doors that it's opened are just blowing my mind. I'm blessed more than I deserve, but I know where it comes from, and I'm aware of the blessings I've received. And I don't take any of it for granted. And I'm into paying it back, paying it forward, giving back. I've acquired a ton of knowledge in 40 years of writing everything down. And now I've discovered a passion for doing seminars and passing on what I've learned and shortening the learning curve. It's taken me 40 years to get to this point. And in my seminars, in 60 minutes, I try to shorten the learning curve for those who are gracious enough to attend and listen to me. I give them the best stuff I've got in the last 40 years. I pour it all into a funnel, and what comes out the bottom is the 1 hour that I tried to give them, the things that have really made a monumental difference for me success-wise, mm-hmm. so that I can shorten their learning curve and they can catch more fish. And it's all from experience. And I'm only sharing what has worked for me, and I don't hold anything back. If you want to compete in tournaments, the stuff I give in my seminars is going to make a difference because it made a difference for me. And I'm all about sharing that. And I've learned, I have as big a passion for sharing what I've learned as I do for still going out and learning every day, mm-hmm. every time I'm on the water. People, I don't like it when people refer to me as an expert, because I don't consider myself an expert. I consider myself a student of the game. That's why I still take notes while I fish and write them down when I get home. That's why I still take notes in class, because I'm a student of the game. The body of water is the classroom. Mm-hmm. The fish are the teachers, and I'm the student, not the expert. I'm there to learn every time, and I never want to stop learning, because nobody can ever know all there is to learn about fishing. We're learning more all the time, but we'll get into that with our next segment.
We will. All right. So that's a great spot for us to stop today for this episode, episode one.
I do have an Instagram I'd like to tell the listeners about. If you're not familiar with it, I'm on Instagram at Roy Bilby. It's just my name, one word, no spaces, all lowercase letters, R-O-Y-B-I-L-B-Y. And that was an offshoot of the Bass Pro Shops contract. We have to have the social media presence because it's such a good promotional tool. And I share a lot on it, but I also use it as a promotional tool. And I have a blast out there. And if you follow it, you're going to see how much fun I have. And I tell you exactly what I'm doing when I have great results.
That is one thing that is also great about you, is that you don't withhold. And there's no secrets. It's like, I caught this fish, but a lot of guys out there are not showing what they're catching stuff on. You know, I do understand protecting your locations. That's big. Got to protect those. But there's nothing wrong
people
with telling people.
Anyway.
Yeah, they find exactly. Landmarks is all it takes. I know. There's a million stories about
those. I got a bunch of stories about those. But you know what? That's cool. These are great locations. That's why I catch a lot of fish. And they're everybody's fish. They're not mine.
That's right. So also, for those of you out there who might have questions or comments, email us at anglerwithinpodcast@gmail.com. I could spell it out for you, but it's anglerwithinpodcast, all one word, @gmail.com.
Keep listening, everybody. I appreciate it. And we will do our best, our level best, to teach you how to tap into your angler within.